Case number 20-5161, Phoenix Herpetological Society, Inc., Appellants v. United States Fish and Wildlife Service, et al. Mr. Coles for the appellant, Mr. Richmond for the appellees.
Good morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. Frederick Coles III, if it may please the court. I represent the appellant in this matter, Phoenix Herpetological Society, Inc., and we are here to set aside and vacate the granting of a joint motion, basically, by the agency to deny my client a renewal to its captive bred wildlife registration and to deny a second or companion application to export Grand Cayman blue iguana to the Aalborg Zoo in Aalborg, Denmark. We look at this application and take the position that the agency's decision-making process denying the two applications was arbitrary, capricious, and unreasonable. Secondly, we think that the district court upholding of those decisions is factually and fatally wrong in that there's a lack of transparency as it relates to the process that the agency utilized and invoked in order to deny the applications. And I think there's one central issue that is related directly to both of the applications, both the denial of the renewal of the CBW and the denial of the export. And it has to do with the agency's position that the zoo, meaning PHS, did not meet its burden as to establishing that the founder stock of Cayman iguanas were legally brought into the United States. It takes the position that...
Well, let me divide them for a moment. On the export question, why isn't the agency's department's decision that sending two blue iguanas to Denmark doesn't satisfy the criteria of the statute because of the genetic problems, given the fact there are no blue iguana in Denmark? Isn't that enough to deny your export request?
We don't believe that it is, Your Honor, based upon the fact that the agency's decision in that regard was not based upon the best scientific information or data. It is true that the Aalborg Zoo does not have any blue iguana in its possession. But the purpose of both the agency and the exporting regulations is to help to propagate the conservation, protection, and promulgation of the species and conservation of the species. The Aalborg Zoo, just like my client, it's a well-established zoo. It's capable of raising and breeding the subject iguanas. The agency takes the position that because the two animals that are subject to export come from the same clutch, what the agency is doing, it's comparing the breeding of reptiles to that of mammals and or birds when the breeding of reptiles is a different category. The information that was provided to the agency, it cherry-picked information to overlook from the authority that it relied upon, that being Fred Burton, that inbreeding did in fact occur not only on the island itself in the wild, but also while they had certain iguanas in their protective captive possession, that inbreeding did in fact take place. That's recognized in a couple of emails that are part of the administrative record coming from Fred Burton that were available to the agency to review. The agency chose to overlook that component of the email and instead focused on another portion that the lack of genetic diversity without any support for such was the basis for denying, in my, our opinion, is the basis upon which they're denying the application. And as much as it's not supported by the facts of the record, and it's not supported by any literature of any type of scientific treaty, we take the position that that decision is in fact unreasonable, capricious, and just flat wrong.
Now, going to the registration question, after you have submitted various explanations with respect to the export, why wasn't the agency legitimate, including, we just don't trust you anymore? You gave three different, wildly different explanations with respect to the ancestry of these animals.
If I may, Your Honor, this was an issue that I wasn't, that my briefing, when I say my briefing, because I substituted in, as Your Honors are aware, did not particularly address. The reason why I didn't address it is because there was an ongoing fight from my review of the record between the agency, between another individual named, I believe it's Mr. Schumacher, who my client had originally engaged, certainly a while prior to this particular application. Then there was a brouhaha as to Mr. Schumacher's involvement. Ultimately, my client terminated Mr. Schumacher with regards to the application process. There's also information that Mr. Schumacher gave incorrect information to the agency while my client was in fact hospitalized in ICU as a result of being bitten by a poisonous snake. When he comes out of the hospital, he owns up to the mistake that was made by Mr. Schumacher and bears it himself. And that's how we get to the various explanations that Your Honor asked me about. But from our position, we are consistent in what it is that we're asking for. And we don't believe that those missteps are such that the agency's denial as to Mr. Blair's affidavit should be taken in the same vein.
So let me just follow up a little bit on the first point that you were discussing with Judge Silberman about the genetic problem.
Yes.
You certainly are correct that Mr. Burton talks about inbreeding happens. But the question that the agency had was not does it happen, as it were, but is this something that's desirable in both the propagation of the species and not harming it? In other words, a different question. Things happen, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what you want to see happen when it's on your watch.
I think the best way that I can answer Your Honor's question is this. The agency certainly has not pointed to any information, any scientific data, any type of reliable scientific information to say that such inbreeding does not occur in iguanas in their natural habitat, even though these animals are in fact in a conservation program within a protected environment. If it's happening in the wild, the fact that it happens in the wild, and even Mr. Burton acknowledged that it did in fact happen while the same wild animals of the same species were in captivity. The agency's position here is not supported by any scientific information to show that there would be a detriment to any animals that were in fact engaged in any form of inbreeding.
So the court defers to these scientific and expert judgments. So I'm just trying to understand, is your position not that the agency was required to acknowledge that there's nothing wrong with inbreeding, but that in order to deny your client's application, it had to point to scientific evidence that inbreeding is harmful to the species?
I think not I think, but my position, it's slightly different than that. And I'm not trying to sort of put it in the realm of engaging in semantics. But basically, our position is there is no scientific information that shows that inbreeding among reptiles and specifically among blue caiman iguana is detrimental to the perpetuation, conservation, and preservation of the species in an instance where those same animals are, in fact, listed as endangered species.
But that's what I'm getting at, that it's listed in Appendix 1 now, and the statute requires the agency to find that this is going to enhance propagation of the species. Can the court say it was wrong to conclude that that would not be consistent with the statutory standard?
I think the court has the authority to conclude that that is wrong if that position by the agency is not supported by scientific information.
Well, you understand, though, that you're... Go ahead. Who's trying to talk here?
Excuse me. Not only is this a scientific question, it's a predictive judgment on the part of the agency, to which we typically defer as well. In other words, if you don't know one way or another, just the risk, as Judge Rogers is suggesting, is a legitimate basis upon which the agency would deny the export license.
I am out of time, if Your Honor, I would like to
respond.
Yes. Our position, and the record supports it, I think it's even acknowledged in the agency's brief, that my client started with initially 4 Grand Cayman blue iguana, and he has grown the population through its conservation efforts to a total of 22 iguana. There's been no incidents of any type of deformities that have been noted. There have been no incidents of any type of bad behavior problems, deficiencies, or anything with respect to my client's care, conservation, and preservation of these animals. He is now, based upon moving forward with promulgating the species, to assist the Aalborg Zoo in basically engaging in the same course of conduct that it did, which in fact has been successful and is in fact contributing to the promulgation of the species by having increased the number from at least 4 up to 22 and possibly more as we're here today.
So I guess my last question here is, your client clearly had the burden, and you don't deny that. So that while I agree, I don't read any criticism, as you're suggesting, of what your client has done here. The agency was looking at an export to a zoo that has no iguanas. And this inbreeding concern, and given what the statute is talking about in terms of enhancing propagation of the species, why not for sort of expertise, and as Judge Silberman points out, predictive reasons, the agency could reasonably deny the permit.
Your Honor is correct that we do have the burden. I think we certainly, by review of the record, I think that we have in fact satisfied our burden. I think there's an ample amount of information with respect to satisfying that burden as it's addressed specifically in, I believe it's the Silverstein forensic report, when you look at the agency's denials, there's no reference to that. There's no taking into consideration any of that. There's no refutation of anything that was put forth in that report that addresses the very questions that Your Honor asked. In addition to that, I think what the agency is doing is the agency is creating an unreasonable and an impossible hurdle as it relates to the export of these animals. The agency relies upon the position, well, the Aalborg Zoo has no blue caiman iguanas in its possession. There was a point in time when my client had no blue caiman iguanas in its possession, and yet it has sufficiently added to the number of such animals in existence. Similarly, every facility that's going to engage into in a conservation program has to start at step one. Step one is, in fact, the first set of animals that are capable of breeding and assisting in population growth. To deny that opportunity to a well-established zoo, where there's information in the record that certainly shows the criteria and the qualifications of the people who operate the zoo, there's certainly nothing deficient as it relates to their qualifications. And secondly, what the agency is doing without supporting it, but it's sort of implicit in their denials and in their rationale, is they're trying to make and assert and inject into this equation the position that the raising of Grand Cayman blue iguana is somewhat unique and distinct from the breeding of any other type of lizard or other iguana. And the record and the scientific record is not, does not support that position.
Can I ask on the lawful acquisition point, your brief, as I understand it, you assume on the law that it's your burden to show that the parent stock was lawfully acquired, and you argue on the facts that you discharged that burden. Is that a fair characterization of your position?
Just so that we're clear and that I didn't misunderstand your question, our position is that the founder stock came into the country prior to the enactment of either the laws in the Grand Cayman here and CITES.
You haven't made the broader argument that that question is irrelevant, is legally irrelevant.
I didn't look at it as a question of being legally irrelevant. I looked at it as a question that was being raised with no basis by the agency.
Because you think you proved lawful import of the parent stock, that they came in before the listing.
Yes, I believe that that my client has sufficiently met its burden in that regard, and I don't think there's anything in the record that contradicts that in any way.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we'll give you some time on rebuttal. Let's hear from counsel for appellees.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Ben Richmond, and I represent federal appellees. Your Honor, what this case concerns is the denial of two different permit applications, a captive bred wildlife registration and an export permit, both of which pertain to plaintiff's population of Grand Cayman blue iguanas, a species which has been listed under the Endangered Species Act since 1983 and protected under the Convention since 1977. What is really here at the heart of the case is plaintiff's applications for these two separate permits and whether the information submitted by plaintiff meet all of the standards required for the service to grant those permits. So what I'd like to do, Your Honors, is briefly frame up for our benefit the different requirements for each of these different permits. I'll start with the export permit. The export permit was plaintiff's application to export four of its Grand Cayman blue iguanas to the Aalborg Zoo in Aalborg, Denmark. For these export permits, there are two groups of findings which need to be made. First, a finding under the Endangered Species Act that the export would enhance the propagation or survival of the species. Then, in the other group of findings for the export permit are two findings under the convention. That is a legal acquisition finding that the species to be exported and its parental stock have been legally acquired, and a non-detriment finding that the animals to be exported would not be detrimental to the species as a whole, and in particular, the species in the wild. The other permit at issue here is the captive bred wildlife registration. And what a captive bred wildlife registration is it allows otherwise prohibited activities under the Endangered Species Act for the purpose of some sort of beneficial breeding program, a captive breeding program designed to promote the endangered species in question. So here there are various findings that need to be made for that captive bred wildlife permit. And those findings cannot be made unless the parental stock of the animals covered by the permit have been legally acquired. So those are all the various requirements. There are three that are relevant here for the export permit, and there's one really that's relevant here, the captive bred wildlife registration. Now, the burden was on plaintiff, as your honors discussed previously. Burden was firmly on plaintiff to provide enough information to allow the service to make these various findings and grant both of the applications. But after three rounds of administrative review, that just wasn't possible here, and the service was not able to make these findings that would allow it to grant these permits. I'll briefly talk about the findings that were made on each of these permits here. So beginning with the export permit, I discussed there were three findings which were crucial. The service could not make two of those findings. It was not able to make an enhancement finding because it determined that plaintiff's final representation that it sought to export four iguanas born from the same clutch to Aalborg, Denmark, where it would have no other iguanas for those iguanas to breed with, would not be consistent with genetic diversity. It also made a finding on legal acquisition. As your honors discussed previously, there were three shifting explanations of the blue iguanas that plaintiffs sought to export. First, it sought to export iguanas from the Life Fellowship and the San Diego Zoo. After that application was denied, plaintiff said it wanted to export two pairs of iguanas, one originating from Thai Park in Florida, the other two originating with Ramon Noegel. Then after that application was denied, there was yet another representation that plaintiff sought to export four iguanas, all from Ramon Noegel. So those shifting explanations here were not credible and cannot be corroborated by a hearsay affidavit, which again, the service was not able to credit because there were serious issues with the credibility of that information.
Well, let me ask you that. Yes, Judge sure. Silverman?
Thank you. On the Blair affidavit, part of it was not hearsay, wasn't it? What Blair himself observed or did?
Yes, Your Honor. All Blair attested to as the affiant was that Ramon Noegel had told him that Ramon Noegel had acquired these iguanas in 1971.
That's not all Blair. That's not all Blair did, though. His affidavit also describes what he did, and that's not hearsay.
Correct, Your Honor. What Blair did himself was not hearsay, but the information about legal acquisition, which is the relevant part of the affidavit that would have been relevant to that legal acquisition requirement, was a hearsay statement.
What about your own investigation, which indicated possibly that Blair was correct?
So, Your Honor, I just want to clarify that the investigation that the service did, it went above and beyond its requirement to review evidence here. It could have just stayed
with right, but it didn't. So,
yes, Your Honor.
Judge Silverman is saying it had that information before it.
Yes, Your Honor. So what the service did in its, which is reflected in its various emails, is it tried to determine whether the Blair affidavit did have any credibility and that account had any credibility. And to do so, it reviewed Ramon Noegel's published iguana research published in the 1980s to try to verify if these iguanas, which had supposedly been imported to the United States in the early 1970s, had been present in the United States before the iguanas were protected under law.
And your investigator, your investigator determined possibly Blair was right.
Your Honor, what the service determined was that there was not enough evidence in that research to show that the iguanas had been in the United States before protection under the convention in 1977. the service, and they not only reviewed the iguana research published by Ramon Nouegel, they also talked to Fred Burton and asked Fred Burton to see who is an iguana researcher with the Grand Cayman Islands government, whether he could corroborate an import of iguanas. And again, there wasn't credible information from Mr. Burton.
Who was the one of your investigators that said it was possible that Blair was right?
Your Honor, I believe that was Fred Burton's recollection in his email. He begins his email by saying, I understand that this may have happened and it is possibly legal. But there were serious issues with his account. So, for example, he mentioned that an individual named Roger Fair had orchestrated the export in what he had heard about this export. And the issue was that the service had information before it that Roger Fair had not arrived on Grand Cayman until the 1980s. And in addition, that account attributing the export to Roger Fair conflicted with Ramon Nouegel's recollection, which was that Ramon Nouegel himself had captured these iguanas in the wild and shipped them back to the United States in his checked baggage. So these many and different varying accounts were just not enough to show a legal acquisition finding here.
So basically, the agency wants a bill of sale that's been notarized.
No, Your Honor. Any clear information that the iguanas had existed in the United States?
The argument is that the man who Blair referred to is dead.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So there's no way to get a direct statement from him. So that's why I say the agency is saying in those circumstances, we're not going to conclude anything less than a bill of sale is.
There's no announcement that a bill of sale is required, Your Honor.
This is why the research about the reality of what happened here.
Yes, Your Honor.
You made your own investigation. You had some indication that this probably happened the way people were saying. There were no eyewitnesses. There was no written bill of sale. And you're just not where somebody's on the appendix one, not somebody, but some species is on appendix one. There's a very high burden, says the agency, even though the requesting party here has an admirable record and the zoo in Denmark has an admirable record, but it just doesn't have any blue iguanas.
Your Honor, a bill of sale wasn't required. The service looked at the research published by Ramon Nouegel in part to try to corroborate that some of these iguanas had just been present in the United States in the early 1970s. Any record from a zoo or research institution that these iguanas were present in the United States would have sufficed. You know, zoos, research institutions, they keep track of the animals in their collection.
Counsel, what appears to have happened here is some of these exotic species were being brought in surreptitiously.
Yes, Your Honor.
You don't have a legal trail.
Yes, Your Honor. It appears that that may have been an issue.
The agency decided it was going to issue this rule establishing this program. So what would otherwise be legal activity could be legal, provided all these criteria were met. And if they weren't met in the agency's view, you wouldn't get your permit.
Correct. If an export here is to be done, then that export has to have animals that have been legally acquired, or their parental stock have been legally acquired. That is consistent with the conservation mandates of the service.
You know what occurs to me, counsel, as time goes on, The getting evidence of legal acquisition prior to the effective date of the statute or in the regulation, you necessarily are going to rely on hearsay because people are going to be dead.
Are
you discriminating against old people?
No, Your Honor, certainly not. So I just want to clarify, you know, the burden here is on plaintiff to present sufficient evidence. And perhaps in some cases, hearsay could suffice. But here, there's just no indicia of reliability to corroborate the hearsay statement.
The problem is the fellow who made the comment, Noble, is it? He's dead.
Noegle.
No, I'm sorry. I'm mispronouncing. He's dead. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes. And the service, you know, exceeded its burden here to review evidence related to acquisition and tried to find additional corroboration of that hearsay statement, understanding that that could possibly be the best evidence before them. But, you know, when it went looking for that information, with Ramon Noegle's published iguana research with its correspondence with Fred Burton, it could not corroborate the hearsay. There was no indicia of reliability which would allow the service to accept that hearsay for the legal acquisition finding.
Why does legal acquisition of the parent stock even matter? The treaty requires that the specimen be lawfully acquired, and specimen is a defined term that means the animal itself, not the animal and go 10 generations back to the beginning of time 4 decades ago.
Yes, Your Honor. So legal acquisition is part of one of the findings under the convention. And in order to put into effect those requirements of the convention, there are rules and regulations. I don't have the specific rule here, but those rules.
Your regulation under the treaty says specimen or parental stock. The treaty just says specimen.
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, maybe the short answer is this wasn't challenged, but you may be asking us to uphold an order based on a law that doesn't really exist, or a requirement that doesn't really exist.
Depending on whether the regulation is a proper interpretation of the statute.
Right.
Yes, Your Honor. And so because these issues weren't raised below, the service didn't have an opportunity to brief the specific rules promulgated here to carry out the convention. But if Your Honors would potentially like additional information or briefing on that matter, that issue is raised, and somehow, even though it wasn't raised below, we'd be happy to do that.
Okay.
I'm certainly not requesting additional briefing.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Talk a little bit, if you will, about the denial of the re-registration request.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you for asking that. So the captive bred wildlife registration, the issue there was, again, the legal acquisition of parental stock. And that registration, you know, it was because essentially what was being considered in the captive bred wildlife registration was the entire population of 22 blue iguanas that plaintiff had in its possession. And the service prompted plaintiff to submit that information on the legal acquisition of its parental stock. And through 3 rounds of administrative review, there was no information submitted about the entire population of the parental stock and whether that had been legally acquired.
So let me just be clear. This organization, so far as the record indicates, has a good record. It's not as though it's been cited by the agency over time for violating regulations or anything.
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor.
Well, not in the record before us.
Not in the record before us.
And I don't
us,
think
sorry.
We want to imply that there may be something out there because the agency hasn't presented that. No
correct,
point
Your Honor,
in smearing somebody's
isn't...
reputation. Okay. So they've been receiving these registrations for years and have done a good job with this particular species, growing it. But following up on Judge Silverman's point, time passes, people die, they can't get the original owner, so they come up with the best information they have. And it's true. The agency says, well, we can't definitively determine legal acquisition of the parental stock.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is there any different standard for export versus registration?
Your Honor, the regulatory scheme for exports versus captive bred wildlife programs are different. And I tried to describe that a little bit earlier. You know, the finding that's key under the captive bred wildlife registration is it's provided under 1721G, which is a rule. There are a variety of different findings and factors which the service would ordinarily have to make to grant that captive bred wildlife registration. But those findings can't be made unless the parental stock of the species covered by the captive bred wildlife permit have been legally acquired.
So the question is, what is the burden for re-registration? What I'm talking about is,
yes,
somebody's been operating under your registrations for years.
Yes.
And there's no evidence that they have ever come into a review or investigation by the agency. Now they want to export some iguanas and they've got a problem. All right.
Yes, Your Honor.
In terms of genetics, apparently, as counsel tells us, there was some fight going on and some misrepresentations were made, but petitioner owned up to them and hoped to go forward. So I'm just a little concerned that under those circumstances, I mean, what is the status now? Is everything they're doing illegal? Can they be fined? Can they be shut down?
Your Honor, the only real result of the permit being revoked is not having that captive bred wildlife registration for their iguanas. This is not an enforcement action.
I understand that you haven't brought that yet. What I'm getting at is they're trying to run a lawful operation.
Yes, Your Honor.
They've had the blessing of the agency for years. And
yes, Your Honor.
Sure, they don't have bill of sales apparently for every animal in their custody now, these 24 blue iguanas.
Yes, Your Honor. So issues arose about the parental stock of the iguanas in question here, and they arose because of the export application. And now,
counsel, to make it clear with respect to Judge Rogers' question, your action so far implicates only the blue iguanas in the stock of the company or the zoo. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. These actions at issue here are only as to Phoenix Herpetological Society's collection of iguanas.
No, but their registration has expired.
Yes, Your Honor.
Totally. It isn't limited to the blue iguanas.
Is it? I misunderstood. I thought the registration affected only the blue iguanas, not the other animals.
Yes. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. There were a whole host of different animals listed on the captive bred.
The 24 iguanas, they have no authority to maintain them?
Correct, Your Honor. They're not. I want to be careful about how I answer this question because there are different regulatory schemes at issue here. But essentially, the plaintiff is not licensed to conduct a captive bred wildlife program as with respect to these Grand Cayman blue iguanas.
What happens to these blue iguanas?
No, what happens to the Phoenix group?
So, Your Honor, the final administrative denial here that was issued by the service prompted plaintiff to work with the service and potentially, you know, submit additional information that could corroborate legal acquisition. But even after that final administrative denial, that's at JA 615.
Counsel, we're curious, what happens to the blue iguanas?
Your Honor, I believe it's in the discretion of the service whether an enforcement action.
To do what?
Potentially enforcement action could be brought. I don't want to speculate as to what the service would do, or the service could try to continue to work with plaintiff to try to get this captive bred wildlife registration renewed as it prompted plaintiff to do at JA 615.
But counsel, if you still deny the registration, what happens to the blue iguanas?
The blue iguanas are still there. They're no longer there's no longer an exemption under Section 9 of the Endangered Species Act that would allow plaintiff to collect, capture.
You're not answering the question.
No.
Why can't we be worried about the blue iguanas?
I'm not sure I understand, Your Honor.
We want to know what happens to the blue iguanas if the registration to hold the blue iguanas is denied.
Yes, Your Honor. As far as I understand now, nothing currently will happen. Plaintiff will still have the blue iguanas. They won't be covered by this permit.
Well, let's try it this way.
Yeah.
Assuming the CBW registration is not reinstated, is it presently lawful for them to possess these iguanas?
No, Your Honor.
Wow.
So, therefore, what happens to the blue iguanas? You don't know.
I don't know. It's at the discretion of the agency how it would follow up here.
And why is that? Is that because you understand the verb take to include possession?
Your Honor, Section 9 also prohibits collect.
Clearly without the permit, they can't export, they can't sell. I get that.
They cannot collect either. That's part of the statute.
Well, collect can mean acquire. You think it means possess?
Perhaps, Your Honor. And again, we didn't have the opportunity to brief this below. I guess there is a question as you're raising whether
most nuclear of all remedies. They yes. Just are shut down. They can't breed, they can't possess. They're out of business.
Well, they're not out of business because I gather they collect or have maintained a lot of different animals.
As to iguanas,
but as to blue iguanas, they're out of business. And that mystifies to me as to what happens to the blue iguanas. You're not going to go out there and kill them.
No, Your Honor. And again, in terms of, a remedy or a path forward here, the most beneficial thing to happen would be for plaintiff to continue to work with the service and attempt to try to corroborate legal acquisition and obtain that captive bred wildlife permit.
And I understand that's the problem, though. The agency is saying, I want a bill of sale. And I know you say hearsay if it's corroborated, but they tried to corroborate it in several ways, and that was not satisfactory to the agency. And that's why I raised the question whether or not the standard under the export permit is different than the standard under the possession in the circumstances where, over the years, the agency has issued these registrations. And this particular organization has been very successful in propagating these blue iguanas. And there's no evidence of any concern by the agency until now. And yet the agency says, well, we're probably wrong in issuing all these previous.
Yes, Your Honor. The agency conceded that at JA 373, that
conceded
it might have to reevaluate prior approvals. That it may have to reevaluate prior approvals in light of this legal acquisition.
They didn't concede anything. They just put who is it? It's the Phoenix Herpetological Society in a precarious position. That's all I'm getting at.
Yes, Your Honor. The burden here was on plaintiff to provide sufficient evidence. After three rounds of administrative review and working with the agency, plaintiff wasn't able to provide that information.
When was the first registration issued? Back in the early 80s?
No, Your Honor. I actually don't have in the record the registration beyond the one that was set to expire in 2017. So I'm not exactly sure at this time how many previous registrations.
Well, it happens for dozens of years is what I'm getting at. The agency comes along with a new concern. Okay. Presumably the blue iguanas could go to another zoo that has a registration. But I don't understand how the other zoo can accept them.
Except
when there's no proof of lawful entry of the parent stock. And under your interpretation, the agency's interpretation, that's what Judge Silverman is focusing on. Do you have to kill these iguanas? Because nobody has authority to maintain them because you can't come up with this bill of sale or this passport. Okay, well.
I'll be interested to hear counsel for petitioner's response to our concern about the blue iguanas.
All right, why don't we turn to counsel for petitioner? We'll give you another couple of minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor had asked whether or not there was a difference as to the legal acquisition as it related to the CBW registration and as it related to the export. My understanding from a review of the decisions that were rendered by the agency was that was the linchpin upon which really both of these applications were denied.
Counsel, would you help us? We're all puzzled at what the significance of the denial of registration. We understand the denial of export, but what is the significance of the denial of registration in real terms? What happens?
I think Your Honors were hinting around it.
Well, I don't think we're hinting.
No.
We're absolutely puzzled. We don't know.
No, I was being somewhat polite to the extent that I believe, based upon what my colleague said, the animals, they're not legally acquired. So if they're not legally acquired by the agency's determination, and that lack of legal acquisition prevents my client from exporting them, in the same vein and along the exact same parallel track, they cannot be transferred to another zoo as was suggested, because that transfer would basically negate the reason for denying the export reason based upon legal acquisition.
That's what Judge Rogers pointed out.
And
what happens to the blue iguana? Do they still stay at your client's location even without registration?
Based upon what my colleague said, I believe the inevitable answer is, which he refused to provide, is they get destroyed.
That can't be true.
Well, he didn't. He said I'm not legally allowed to withhold them.
Saying, well, the agency has discretion as to whether it brings an enforcement action. But, yes, Judge Katsas.
If they get destroyed, then that's harm, which is a separate ESA violation. If they don't get destroyed, that's continued possession, which the government thinks counts as collection, which is a violation. So what do you do?
Your Honor, I look at this and I say, here's an agency, and this is what the whole basis of our position is. It's arbitrary, it's capricious, and it's absolutely unreasonable for many of the reasons that are the concerns of all three of Your Honors.
Yes, but you're not answering the question. Nobody's answering the question, what happens to the blue iguanas?
No, he answered it.
I believe they get destroyed.
That can't be correct. Can I go back to counsel for the government? Are you saying it's likely they'll be destroyed? I'm asking counsel for the government.
No, Your Honor.
Can you assure us they won't be destroyed?
I think it would be highly unlikely that they would be destroyed. It'd be hard for me to believe that. Unfortunately, what I'm struggling with here, Your Honor, is we don't know what the agency will do in its discretion here.
That's my point. That's the only answer
exactly,
you have.
Exactly, Judge
Rogers. The society has hanging sort of a sword of Damocles over its head. So one day the agency shows up on its doorstep with an enforcement action. Maybe a modification to the regulations is required.
Sorry, may I speak, counsel? May I speak, Your Honor? Perhaps. I just wanted to emphasize, you know, there are three rounds of administrative review here. And the service was really doing all it could here on giving every opportunity to try to collect the information available to meet these requirements. Perhaps the regulations, you know, perhaps the regulation could be challenged in the future. Perhaps some of these issues of the regulations might be taken up, but that just wasn't briefed here below or challenged below.
Does the service have some mechanism? And this kind of problem must come up, which is you find people who are unlawfully possessing endangered species. Is there some mechanism by which the service, if it chose, could come in and take possession and care for the animals or you know, send them to Denmark or whatever?
So, Your Honor, I'm sorry, but I wasn't able to familiarize myself with the specific enforcement provisions that the service would have available to it.
Well, in any event, are you saying that the denial of the registration itself has no enforcement aspect at all? The denial of the registration has no meaning?
Again, I'm sorry, Your Honor, but I don't have that information available to me right now. If the court, again, wanted supplemental briefing on this, the government would be happy to submit it.
I guess the question is, clearly before us is a challenge that the denial of the registration renewal was arbitrary and capricious. And that's why I raised the question as to whether the agency views these requirements differently for export and registration. And I thought that might be hinted at in your brief because you repeatedly criticized petitioners for responding to the agency's request with one submission as opposed to responding separately as to the export, separately as to the registration. But I gather that is not your position. And so the question is, was it arbitrary and capricious for the agency to reach the conclusion it did here when, so far as we're being told today, it is possible that, absent a registration, the society has no authority to continue to maintain these iguanas that are on Appendix 1, and it has no way to prove what the agency is requiring. And so the agency is essentially, what do we say, cutting off its own, I'll get the analogy wrong, but the point is it's supposed to be preserving and promoting and protecting. And that's not the result here. Because if you have wild species for which the current lawful or previously lawful possessor cannot show a bill of sale, then despite the preservation and enhancement desires, the species has to be destroyed.
Your Honor, I just want to clarify a few points there. So in terms of this action being consistent with the Policy of Endangered Species Act, you know, the service has certain conservation mandates. And part of that is making sure that there's a well-administered captive bred wildlife program where individuals and research institutions aren't breeding potentially iguanas with parental stock that have been illegally required.
So the result of your argument is they have to be destroyed because nobody has authority to have them because nobody can prove.
No, Your Honor, that's not the position of the service. That's not,
well,
not the position of the service.
The service investigated and it couldn't find anything to satisfy it that these iguanas were brought in lawfully.
The position of the service is only that a captive bred wildlife registration can't be issued because plaintiff failed to meet the criteria outlined under the permit. And I'll also add-
I think you said that counsel, four counsel, times. And the point yes. is, what is the conclusion? And that's what Judge Silberman has been zeroing in on.
What's the implication yes, of the denial of registration? That has to be before us. I think the presiding judge should ask the government to come in, not necessarily with a new brief, but just a statement as to what the significance of the denial of registration is, perhaps in 10 days. What happens as a result of that? Could we do that? Could we ask counsel to at least provide us with a statement as to what the legal implications of denial of registration are?
Judge Katsas?
With me.
Yeah. All right. So we would like a filing by appellees stating what is the effect of the denial of registration.
Yes, Your Honor.
And specifically, what happens to the 24 blue iguanas that the society currently possesses and has possessed for decades under registrations issued by the agency? And what do we want to say? A maximum of 5 pages. Today is the 12th. Submitted to the court within a week. Is that possible? Be the 19th?
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely.
The only reason I hesitate, Judge Silberman, is I don't know what the implication of that is for the petitioners. And maybe we'll see.
Perhaps they should have the same 5 days to give their understanding of what the denial of registration means.
So simultaneous filings?
Yes, I think so. Otherwise, it would drag it on too long.
No, okay. So you're suggesting 5 days? It's giving them a week.
Well, whatever you say.
Counsel for appellants.
I believe that, I mean, look, I will defer to the court as to the time frame that the court wants to impose.
All right, but you would have no problem submitting a statement. Say today is the 12th.
By next Friday?
A week from Friday. Yeah, that's sort of a week.
That'll be fine.
All right. And no more than 5 pages.
That would be fine. May I make one additional comment that was raised very early in the argument as part of my rebuttal, if I may?
Yes.
I think Judge Silberman pointed out that the Blair affidavit contained certain information that was in fact not hearsay. And upon rereading some of my own writings, I may not have written it as clearly as I probably should have. And I noticed that when I was preparing for argument yesterday and was going through some of the materials that were in fact part of the record. So specifically looking at JA000175, which is in fact the March 2nd, 2006 affidavit from David Blair to Helen Wilson. The part that I believe the judge was referring to is where Mr. Blair says, I obtained in 1971 from Roman Magel in Florida. That is not hearsay. That is coming from the individual and the maker of the statement himself. It's not being used for certainly any controversial.
Counsel, we already recognize that.
Okay. Yeah. Anything for
that meets our burden.
All right. So then by March 19th, counsel will submit a statement on the effect of denial of the registration to the society and regarding the iguanas listed in Appendix 1 currently in its possession.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. And we will await your filings. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.